Hazel Kahn, and this is North Fork Works. And my guest today is Laura Clary. I've never met her before, but she's sitting right opposite me. And we're going to talk about bees, among other things. So let's start kind of at the beginning.
Well, I was born in New Jersey and had always wanted to be a marine biologist. I went to do my undergraduate work at Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida, and then my graduate work at Stony Brook on Long Island. And I received my master's in marine science, went to work as an oceanographer for the feds in Washington for a year, but just did not like it. I worked for the Minerals Management Service doing fisheries work on offshore oil and gas rigs. And their time frame that they work on is a 7-year time frame. And it was too long for me to see action. So I came back to Long Island and worked for the Peconic Estuary Program through the Suffolk County Health Department, and had just an absolute wonderful time. And from there, I went to the Nature Conservancy, and from there, I worked at the town. And so,
what did you do at the town?
At the town, I worked part-time as their wildlife biologist, I guess I was. I'm not sure, I remember what my title was, but basically worked in land preservation with Melissa Spiro. Now that I've worked for every level of government, including the state
local.
For a little bit, looking at local versus state versus federal, I love working on the local level. Things get done quicker, and there's just this camaraderie that I never really saw at any other level. You know, county was great too, state, feds. I had a great experience at every level, but there was something very special and still is about the town level, which is why I still volunteer for the Tick Management Committee as well as the Deer Management Committee. In a sense, I guess I've evolved onto land now because I don't really deal as much with marine science issues anymore. My life really is about the terrestrial world, specifically the bees.
And you're involved with the vineyard as well, right? Or with wine?
My husband, Adam Supernant, he's the winemaker for Osprey's Dominion.
Ah.
So he's been there for over 16 years. And before that, he was in Napa Valley, and before that, Chateau Lafite in France. So he has a wonderful pedigree and just loves making wine. So in 2008, he decided to start his own winery and his own private wine label. So that's Coffee Pot Cellars. We're named after the Orient Point Lighthouse. The nickname of it is Coffee Pot.
Oh, I see.
We only make about 1,000 cases a year, and we actually buy all of our grape.
So you use their equipment.
Exactly. It's pretty fun, and it's been wonderful that 3 years ago we opened up our own tasting room in Kutchog. So Blossom Meadow Farm, my company, shares space with Coffee Pot Cellars, my husband's company. I'm very fortunate that it's both companies, because if it was just my company, Blossom Meadow Farm, there's no way I would be able to have my own store. So both of us don't want to be, these huge, huge businesses. To both of us, success in life is balance, right? So we get to see each other for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I love that. We just want to be that small place that people hear about by word of mouth. And that goes not only for Coffee Pot Cellars, but also for Blossom Meadow Farm. 2009 is when I started my company. Seven years ago. And I've been a beekeeper for over 15 years, but keeping honeybees. But I didn't want to incorporate right away because I wanted to really learn the business. And I've been out here since 99. At first, I thought, hey, honeybees were everything. I've always enjoyed native bees, but the focus was always on honeybees. That was really up until, I guess, 5 years ago, when my honeybees were having such a difficult time, as I'm sure you've heard across the nation and the world. And I really started reevaluating things and realizing that it's not viable to be a commercial beekeeper on Long Island anymore. And, really had to reassess things. And once I started reading more and more papers, I realized honeybees aren't the future and what I should be focusing on. It's native bees. There's actually 4,000 different bee species nationwide.
Yeah, that was one of my questions. How many are there?
Yeah, kind of mind-boggling to think about. 4,000 bee species nationwide. Within the Northeast, there's 447 different bee species. Now, honeybees, which is what everybody talks about, they're not even native. They're actually from Europe. And the only reason why people really like to keep them is because they make honey. People think that beekeepers always keep honeybees. Whenever I see people even in the grocery store or whether it's just walking my dog, people always ask if I have any honey left for sale.
Which is what I asked you when you came in the door.
But there's so much more to bees. Native bees are 2 to 3 times better at pollinating than honeybees, not the other way around. We have this major pollination crisis on Long Island and nationwide. The conversation about bees needs to change. People need to start thinking not about wonderful honey, but about what other ecosystem services they provide. It's about managing bumblebees. It's about managing mason bees, leaf cutter bees, all these native bees that do most of the pollination work everywhere.
But honeybees also do pollination, but not as efficiently or...
Exactly. Before World War II, most farmers had a multitude of different crops. They kept some natural land and hedgerows as windbreaks. So there were places for the native bees to live. After World War II is when a lot of farmers started farming every inch of their land. And they would farm just like 1 or 2 crops, right? So a monoculture. Mm-hmm. In order for a bee to be healthy, they need a diversity of flowers to feed from. Mm-hmm. And they need a place to live. So 65% of our native bees are actually ground nesters, including bumblebees, of which there are over 15 different kinds on Long Island. So after World War II, a lot of farmers got rid of where those bees lived. They planted crops instead. Where? Then honeybees became more important because a honeybee hive can get up to 80,000 in one colony, 80,000 individuals. Yes. Mm-hmm. In 1 pound of bees is 3,300 individuals, if you want to talk pound-wise.
1 pound of weight.
Yes. So a honeybee hive can vary from 30,000 individuals up to 80,000, depending on the time in the season it is. And so when farmers just grow monocultures, they'll bring in honeybee hives because the honeybees can just go after that one crop.
And they don't have to build a hive.
Exactly, exactly. They don't have to worry about their overall well-being every stage of their life cycle because they just bring in those boxes, the hive itself. Honeybees can fly up to 3 miles. Another reason why honeybees are really good for monocultures or factory farms, people call them. For the honeybees, the worker female will go out. It'll decide whether to collect either nectar or pollen. It's one or the other with them. So they really specialize. All bees are vegetarians. For all bees, the pollen is their protein source. The nectar is their carbohydrate source. Whenever honeybees land on a flower, they land on the petals first and then walk in. Honeybees collect the pollen on pollen baskets on their legs. They are efficient pollen collectors, but not efficient pollinators because it doesn't fall off of them easily. So they bring that all back to the hive. Now, native bees, for example, the mason bee, they have furry undersides. So when they go to a flower, they belly flop right on it. They collect nectar and pollen at the same time, and they move all around on the flower, on the center of the flower. Since they collect pollen on their undersides, it falls off of them easily as well.
So as they go to another flower.
Yes, right. So they're much better at pollinating. Mason bees as well as leafcutter bees, since they carry the pollen on their undersides, they kind of look like flying cheese puffs when they're in the air. Mm-hmm. They're really fun to watch. So the honeybees will bring the nectar back to their hive, give it to a worker bee that's inside. They put it into the cells, the honeycomb cells. They blow bubbles into the nectar to reduce the water content down. So it comes in at about 85% water content. They bring it down to 17% water content. And once it's a 17% water content, it's considered honey. So they cap it over with beeswax to keep it until they need it. Now, all these other native bees, they live such a short amount of time that they don't make honey. They just eat the straight wildflower nectar. The only reason why honeybees produce honey is because that's their food source too. All bees will eat the pollen because that's the protein. But with the nectar, it doesn't make sense for, say, a mason bee to make honey because it only lives as a flying bee for a month, 30 days. Whereas honeybees live over the winter as a colony. And so it makes sense for them to make honey. And another bee that does make honey is a bumblebee. But bumblebees don't make enough honey for us to harvest. They just make enough for themselves. Their colonies are much smaller. On average, a bumblebee nest is about 24 in a nest, except for common eastern bumblebees that can get about 250 to 450 individuals.
That's really interesting. You know, I'm so ignorant about this. I'm ashamed to even say this on air. I really only thought of bees as making honey for me.
Mm.
I never thought of them as that it's they do it for their own food. That is their own food.
Yeah, you are definitely not the first person to say that at all. That's why I love having our tasting room in Kutchog. People come in and Adam and I both believe so much in bee conservation, and you're reaching a whole different segment of society. When I worked for the Nature Conservancy or Peconic Estuary Program, you're preaching to the choir all the time. But instead, over a glass of wine or a tasting, you know, you start waxing poetic about nature, the world, bees. And I keep an observation hive full of honeybees inside the tasting room. The mason bees are flying in May outside the tasting room. Yeah. I mean, it's just, they just make me so happy. Mm. Honeybees are not the greatest thing since sliced bread. I mean,
are they invasive then?
Yes, they are considered an invasive species.
Really?
Mm. There's also research showing that since honeybees evolved with the plants from Europe, when they are brought over to the United States, they actually still preferentially pollinate the non-native species, many of which are invasive. So they're increasing the seed set of invasive species in the United States. And they're also competing for food with our native bees, the native bees of which are better pollinators than these honeybees. Also, managed bees have been found to spread disease to native bee populations.
The thing that honeybees are really good at is making honey.
Exactly.
So the real issue is not we need more honey, but we need more pollinators.
Exactly. Major issues. Pesticides,
yeah.
Habitat loss, not enough food, not enough flowers. There are so many problems when it comes to bees.
I want to ask you about this article that I read about bees dying of stress.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're always being moved around.
Mm-hmm.
These commercial people, they have the hives and they go from farmer to farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And the bees have to always get used to a new place.
Right.
And it's just, they're just stressed out from that.
Right. There are migratory honeybee keepers. They basically follow the bloom around the United States, whether it's the citrus bloom in Florida, blueberries in Maine, almonds in California. It really pushes those honeybees to more of a brink. They just have a monoculture growing, and there's no natural habitat for those bees to live. For instance, with the almond crop, they'll truck in a bunch of, there's just acres, of miles upon miles of just almonds.
But their job is only to pollinate then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Laura Clary is talking about bees and bee farming on the North Fork. This is Hazel Kahn and North Fork Works on WPKN Radio.
You can only move honeybees at night because that's when they're all in their hive.
Mm-hmm.
Then in the morning, open the screens and let them fly around. Since their queen is in the hive, all those bees always want to come back to their queen.
That next morning, they may be in a different place.
Exactly.
And that's stressful. And plus the travel.
The traveling is stressful. And also, those bees are just feeding off of one type of flower. So they also are not the healthiest bees. Average colony losses actually in the United States from 2006 through 2014 were on average about 51% losses each year. The ones that survived, they split them out in the spring so they have more hives. But all of those hives are weak. So the actual number of hives in the United States does not accurately reflect the strength of the honey beekeeping industry.
Right. So they're weak when they're split just because there's fewer of them and there's a sort of an optimal number of bees in a hive.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Since there has been this difficulty with honeybees, it made an opportunity for mason bees. Almonds bloom really early, and mason bees only live for a month in the early spring. So they are perfect for pollinating the almonds. Now, some almond growers are using mason bees to pollinate their almonds. They're not even using honeybees anymore, which is great because people are starting to see how important these native bees are. The native bees have been on the sidelines doing most of the pollination, but the honeybees have always gotten the credit. Now, finally, these native bees are getting the credit through the almond population. We need to start doing the same thing out here on the East Coast. So I landed my first pollination contract for apples with my mason bees last year. The science is still so new on mason bees, so I have a few thousand mason bees. They live naturally in old beetle tunnels in a dead tree, in holes in driftwood, even hollow stems. They'll lay their eggs in there. And since they are better pollinators than honeybees, you only need 625 mason bees per acre of apples.
Really?
Versus 120,000 honeybees. It's crazy, right? Then they only fly 300 feet from their hive. The female goes on average 6 pollen collecting trips, brings that back to the nesting block, puts it into the tunnel, lays an egg on it. She collects some mud, plugs up where she laid
with
the egg.
One egg?
Yep. Plugs up that hole, sleeps in the tunnel overnight, next day does the same thing. After 35 days of laying 35 eggs, she dies. That's her whole life. Another reason why bees are having a difficult time worldwide is because of climate change. This December, remember how warm it was?
Absolutely.
So even though I did enjoy these warm days, I did see effects on my bees, honeybees and mason bees.
Yeah, it's a bittersweet thing, that warm weather. It's
great, definitely.
But you've got to realize it's also bad.
Yeah.
So when people say that they don't know what colony collapse is about, they do really, right?
They do. I describe colony collapse disorder as a death by a thousand cuts. You have pesticides, habitat loss, not as many flowers, climate change. All these things are really having an effect. Native bees still do not get the attention with colony collapse. You just hear about honeybees, and that's because of the big honey industry,
right?
You know, it used to be a farmer was also a beekeeper, way before you had all of these large factory farms. The field farmer, the dirt farmer, was also the beekeeper. Now you have this major disconnect. You have these factory farms that are miles and miles large, and they're not the ones that keep bees. They bring in a beekeeper. So are we doomed if we don't have bees? Well, flies are also pollinators. And so flies are generalist pollinators. So deer flies and horse flies, yellow jackets and wasps are also pollinators. They're just not very good. And butterflies are also pollinators. So say there were no bees in the world at all, you would still have some pollination going on. But it would all be for crops that are good for generalist pollinators. There are bees that are specific to some orchids in the rainforest. And so if you didn't have any bees, those orchids would die. So would we be doomed?
The question is more, would the bees be doomed? Are bees doomed or will they survive since our welfare is tied to them?
Yeah. Are bees doomed? The answer to that question is still forming. I mean, really, in the next 15 years, it's going to say a lot.
Would you say there is a lot of consciousness and a lot of people are doing what you're doing?
Not enough yet. Definitely not enough.
Have you brought anybody into the field?
Yeah. Actually, now with mason bees, I have mason bees at the store. There are now 12 different bee ranchers, and it looks like there's going to be about 25 this year, Long Island. So they buy the cocoons from me and the equipment, and everybody that's tried it, they've actually gotten more the year after. And then when we harvest our cocoons in November, I have a bee buyback program where any bees, the cocoons people don't want, then I'll buy them back So now they're part of our agricultural community as well.
Yeah, that's really good that you are building a tribe of beekeepers. That's great. That's
Definitely.
I mean, you've talked fluently and with great vitality about bees.
Oh, I love them.
You love them?
Yeah.
How do you think of them? Do you think of them as like pets, like children, like employees, like plants, like cows?
I love that you asked me this question because I thought of this about 5 years ago when my honeybees started having a difficult time. I needed to assess, you know, what are they to me? The ones that are in my yard, my mason bees, leaf cutters, bumblebees, and my one honeybee hive that's at my house, they are my pets.
Pets.
All the other bees that I have on other private properties on Shelter Island as well as the North Fork, they are livestock. And so I make that distinction in my head so I can't be so emotionally attached to them.
Obviously, you really have a passion for bees.
Right. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. You have an environmental, ecological relationship.
Yeah.
And it's doing your part for the environment. And then you like them.
They're the unsung heroes of our land. And I just feel bad that they've never really had that time in the spotlight. Yeah, there's still time, but we can't wait much longer. That's why shows like this are so important. I mean, it's so important. I mean, who doesn't like strawberries? Who doesn't like squash?
No, I understand. I mean, that's part of the larger role that you play by being a conservationist and being a scientist, by being a person who knows their place in the world, in the ecosystem.
I love how bees fit into the entire food web. It's funny, sometimes I see birds eating my bees because you never want to put your bees right next to a birdhouse because then it's just, you know, really expensive fast food for them. 96% of the terrestrial North American birds actually feed their babies insects.
Yeah, they can't get that much from the forest, from the understory anymore.
Right, right.
So small plants out there.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm like, all right, my bees are important for so many different aspects, but, you know, for me, they just feed my soul.
And what do you do for them? Do you think you protect them? Is that your job?
I wish that was the case. But if I truly was protecting them, then I wouldn't have to keep on talking about it anymore. They would be thriving.
If they were thriving, you wouldn't be a beekeeper?
I would still be a beekeeper. But a few years ago, I really had a hard time talking publicly about bees. And my husband said to me, hey, get over yourself. The issues you're working on are greater than you. You just need to do this for them.
You had a hard time. It was upsetting.
You never know what people are going to ask you. You know, it just kind of gets scary because you don't want to say the wrong thing. It's so important. It's absolutely so important.
But you are protecting them by educating people about them. No?
Once I see the trends reverse, then I'll feel like I'm protecting them. I'm trying now, but protecting just sounds like too strong of a word. Here in our own backyard, identified two different species of bumbles this year. So common eastern, as well as the greater northern bumblebee. There's still over 15 different species of bumbles. I have not seen them in my backyard. With the bumblebees, they're finding that the systemic pesticides are also affecting them. With monarch butterflies, you know, habitat loss is the number one cause, but also pesticides like permethrin that folks are spraying on their lawns for ticks. Permethrin is a neurotoxin. It kills not only ticks, but it also kills bees. And so when you're just spraying right on the ground, you're killing the bees that would have pollinated your garden. The permethrin spray significantly negatively affects monarch caterpillars, and so they never turn into butterflies. I'm pretty excited about 2016 this year because Orient Beach State Park wants to work with me on a native bee project. We're still in the discussion phases of exactly what that means, but we're going to have a whole education campaign.
Because it's a huge amount of space, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got your marine there too, you've got the water.
Exactly. Just state parks, when they asked me, I was kind of blown over. I couldn't believe it. There are so many native species that already live there. It's just that no one really realizes it. So John Asher from Museum of Natural History, as well as Roy Latham.
We didn't really talk about the North Fork and what you feel about the North Fork.
I just got back from California, and I love traveling. But one of the reasons why I like traveling is so I can come home again. And you see where you fit into the world. And I definitely fit into the North Fork. I love that on the North Fork, individuality is really embraced and small business is embraced. Talking about bees, obviously, is my life, kind of what my whole being is made up of. And I love that when I go to the post office, not only do I know the folks behind the counter, Darlene and Andrew and Russ, but they ask me, how are the bees doing? And they really mean it. They really want to know about them. I've brought the mason bee cocoons for them to see. I mean, it's so much fun that everybody's rooting for me and then coming on board being bee ranchers as well. I don't think you see that type of community many places anymore because of the internet and how international things mm-hmm. have gotten. There's something just so unbelievably special about it.
You've explained how you came to bees. So then the question is, where will bees lead you? Are there things you're planning?
Working with Orient Beach State Park, that's like bringing me to a whole nother level. I don't know where it's going to take me. My husband and I bought a small farm this past year, and so we're going to put in production this coming year in Southold on South Harbor Road. And there are these sunflower leafcutter bees. No one is commercially raising them in the United States and not even the world. I got them to lay their eggs in tubes. And so my goal this year is now to get their populations to increase. And 3 years from now, for them to be a commercially viable population. Sunflower leafcutter bees are fantastic for pollinating sunflowers, but also Jerusalem artichokes, also known as sunchokes, purple coneflowers, black-eyed Susan, anything that has that shape of a flower. And they live from June through September. So I'm really starting to figure out their biology. That's my goal. 3 years from now, to be able to not only have mason bees for bee ranching, but sunflower leafcutter bees for bee ranching. And on our farm, all of our crops are going to be pollinated by these natives. And so it won't just be like, hey, here are some blueberries for sale. It'll be, here are some blueberries for sale that my bumblebees pollinated. Or here are some natural sunflower bird feeders that my sunflower leafcutter bees created. They're better at pollinating. And they're so cool because they actually cut circles, little circles out of leaves. And then they use that to swaddle their bee babies.
Where?
It's so cool. In the tubes, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
How big would that be?
They're about the same size as the mason bees. So the mason bees like to live in a hole that's about 7.5 millimeters in diameter, whereas sunflower leaf cutters like 7 millimeters.
You really are a scientist, don't you?
But yeah, so working with Orient Beach State Park, getting sunflower leafcutter bees off and going, and then getting our farm into full production in the next 5 years that I'm pretty excited about.
Well, that sounds terrific. Really terrific.
So my phone number is 631-905-9780. I'm always at the store, Blossom Meadow Farm, just east of the King Cullen Shopping Center in Cutchogue on Main Road. And my website is blossommeadow.com.
Blossom Meadow. That's what you're about, right? You want lots of meadows with blossoms on them.
Oh, definitely. That's a good company name.
Well, that was lovely. Thank you very much for coming over.
Oh, thank you, Hazel. I really appreciate it.
You heard Laura Clary talking about being a bee farmer on the North Fork. You can hear North Fork Works on the first Wednesday of every month at this time. All North Fork Works programs are produced by Tony Ernst and archived on hazelkahn.com.